Welcome to Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies. I'm your host, Lisa Schmeiser.
And I'm your host, Lisa Schmeiser. No, wait, that's not right.
No, that can't be right.
Should we start that again?
No.
All right.
No, tape's rolling.
That's right. We're committed now.
Yeah.
So tell me, Phil, what are we talking about this time?
Yes, I am Philip Michaels. I'm not Lisa Schmeiser. We are talking...
More so is the pit.
We as always, Lisa, we talk about movie trailers of movies that we have not seen.
And probably do not plan to see.
I think that's especially true in the case of tonight's trailers that we have just watched.
I think this is actually the best way to do movie reviews, ruthlessly prejudging on 2 minutes of carefully edited footage.
Yes, it's a podcast about anger and confusion and ignorance. It's a Trump rally!
with 100% less brutality.
Yes, so... Speak for yourself.
Don's made in China hat to avoid the splatter.
All right. So, making movies great again, we have first Jack Reacher 2.
I guess they finally gave him a little wand for reaching to get things off the top shelf.
Jack Reacher 2, the reach around, or Jack still reaching, I believe.
Reaching for relevance.
Reach for the stars.
For a point.
It's actually Jack Reacher, never go back, which seems like a strange thing to tell people.
Well,
to do about your movie.
They're accurate. We're never going back to watch a Jack Reacher movie.
Now, I did not see the first Jack Reacher. Did you see it? Because I know that you...
I haven't...
You go on one of your cable prowls, and you see some terrible things.
I turn down the lights.
Yes.
I lower the shades.
You lower the shades so neighbors can't see, and then Godzilla is on our TV.
I know. Well, if it's Jean Reno on the screen, I apologize for nothing. So, I didn't see the original.
It started life as a comic book, did it not? Or a
It's actually not. It was a...
Well, then I'm just totally misinformed about this.
From what I understand, and I want to stress to the listeners at home, we're not checking Wikipedia for this at all. This is purely going off memory. From what I understand, it was a series of books, and basically Jack Reacher wanders the earth like... David Banner.
Like Kane in Kung Fu.
Or David Banner, really.
Or any one of a number of 70s shows.
He is your derivative new American hero in that he has been frightfully, expensively trained by our U.S. government, yet has somehow become disillusioned, and rather than keep tabs on somebody who could kill you with a dirty look and a pinky, he is apparently permitted to roam around the countryside righting wrongs. There was, I believe, some coverage of when Tom Cruise got attached to the Reacher movies, because in the books, Reacher is quite big.
Yes.
And Tom Cruise is very
pocket-sized.
Is very famously our most famous travel-sized movie star.
Yes.
I prefer to think of him. He passes the TSA liquid requirements. That is why Tom Cruise is so popular as an international market, is because you can just put him in your pocket and go right through security.
Whenever Tom Cruise is filming a movie, phone book sales go through the roof, because you got to stand him on something so that he can tower over his leading lady.
The thing is, though, is he's maybe a few years off from doing that thing that Morgan Freeman had to do in the 90s, where we all pretended that he was not a human man, but was in fact just a sonorous voice attached to Ashley Judd's sidekick in movies.
Yes.
Like, there was that whole thing going on for a while where she would make movies with him and he'd be like, "It's my pleasure to basically be your wise concierge, pretty woman."
"Well, I don't know what you're barking up, but I'll follow you to the end of the earth."
I don't have any interests of my own, despite being a man in my seventh decade of life. Why don't we hang out and I will completely not make a pass at you? And so Tom Cruise is only about 5 years off from where, if you start pairing him with women in their 20s and 30s, it's going to look weird and wrong.
Yeah, and he's being paired in this movie with Kobe Smulders.
Yes, her name is a sentence.
Yes, and boy, does she smolder.
Well, Kobe Smulders is also known for playing Maria Hill in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I will take your word for it.
And she is also known for How I Met Your Mother, a show that neither you nor I watched.
Yep.
So there you go. There's a whole...
I learned that a person named Kobe Smulders exists.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I see Robert, and we saw Robert Nepper as the baddie.
Yes, your old friend, Robert Nepper.
I love his work, and good for him for getting work, but he's in that wilderness period in his career right now where he is where Andre Brower was when Andre Brower had to play the heavy in Fantastic Four 2, which is the thing that actually happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
This was the Silver Surfer?
Yes, Andre Brower was your heavy.
Because I've lost track of all my Fantastic Four movies. I'm not up to date on my Fantastic Four mythology.
There are three Fantastic Four movies.
I tuned out after the first one.
None of them are fantastic.
No.
No. Maybe the fourth time will be the charm. Yes. Because it is the Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm. That's all they needed to do is make four of the movies and then it would hit.
Yeah, why couldn't they just like hide the first three?
So Jack Reacher, from what I can gather from the trailer, he is very punchy.
Yeah.
He likes
and
to
not
hit
like
people.
In the hasn't had a whole lot of sleep way.
No.
And
he just starts punching people and threatening people. And
I think what I found most off-putting about this is the implication that it perpetuates the myth that a lone person with enough expertise can take on a bunch of armed people and come out the winner. It's that lone wolf mentality that I think is an especially dangerous American myth and an American archetype. And I'm getting to the point where I have very little patience for seeing it on screen. I was kind of okay with it in the Captain America movies because A, the Russo brothers can choreograph a fight. And
yes,
B, you're talking about somebody who's a walking science experiment. And that's the whole point to him is that he's not fully human.
And also Chris Evans is of the age where he can pull it off. Tom Cruise is rapidly reaching that point where the action hero.
Where's my Lipitor?
Yes. Where
like he's going to brawl. He's going to brawl for his right to Medicaid.
Yeah.
Anyway, but to get back to the bigger point, the bigger point is you're making these movies about these guys who basically, again, can defy physics and bullets and, oh, they're smart and they have army combat skills. And so they can easily fight their way out of a group of heavily armed people. And I feel like that's just such a dangerous and toxic myth.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of seeing it on screen.
The only Tom Cruise movie of recent vintage that hasn't been lost to the mist of time that I remember enjoying was Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, we loved that one.
I did enjoy that one. Because again, in that one, he's not like super cool badass guy who walks around punching people. He
gets his butt kicked repeatedly.
He dies repeatedly in
that's
that
like
movie.
The whole point of that movie. Well, so actually,
and it works. It works. It works
beautifully because all of that intensity goes to such a great purpose. It's a guy who's like intense and that's all he is.
I believe that Tom Cruise would die repeatedly when faced with the scenarios that I do not believe Tom Cruise would break into someone's home and break their arm.
To talk about Edge of Tomorrow just a little bit more,
yeah.
This goes back to he's entering that stage of the career where he mentors young women because it's him and Emily Blunt in that movie.
Right.
And like there is literally nothing going on between them other than I have a mutual respect for your skills. And I really enjoy that, to be honest with you. It's nice to see a male and female lead who are just working together for the sake of working together. But I really hope that whatever he's doing next in his career, it doesn't involve him like finding love with a cancer patient as leaves fall in Central Park.
Well,
or some nonsense
I've
like
actually
that.
Pulled up his IMDb.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, there's going to be a Top Gun 2. I was unaware of that.
Oh Jesus!
And another Mission Impossible. I haven't seen the only Mission Impossible I saw was the first one, and that was literally 20 years ago.
I saw like...
My God, what has happened to you, Tom Cruise?
I didn't see Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. Mm-hmm. I did see Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Ghost Protocol.
And
In this movie, Ethan Hunt has to tell a ghost what to eat at dinner and which fork to use. And how to address heads of state, when he should bow. Don't give that gift to a Japanese person.
Always,
that is a grave insult.
Always presenting
a ghost.
Can you change your color? Maybe white is seen as a color of mourning in some nations.
Yes. No, he's advising the ghost from Pac-Man, and when he criticizes them, they turn blue and run away. Yeah, it was a really weird turn for the Mission Impossible franchise.
Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol has Simon Pegg as a tech nerd.
Yeah.
And
they're buddies now, Simon Pegg and Tom Cruise, at least they present as buddies in the...
Simon Pegg seems like he gets along with a lot of people.
Yeah, he seems affable.
Yeah, or if not, he's like an agreeable kind of cranky.
Or he puts on a good show.
Well, you and I are an agreeable kind of cranky. We're pals.
Yeah, sure.
I think we could hang with Tom Cruise. We could talk to him.
No, we could not.
I actually think he'd be an interesting dude to hang with. I do.
I think intense people put off.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
I'm fascinated by them in short doses.
Well, there you go.
I am. Because one of the things that fascinates me are people who are monomaniacal about something just because that kind of singular focus, I'm utterly incapable of it. And so I want to study it. It's the same way I'm fascinated by sharks, where I'm never going to be a predator that was perfectly engineered millions of years ago. So watch the phenomena, admire it for what it is, you know?
Yes. You saw him in Tom Cruise, not the shark.
Yeah, yeah.
You, in Rock of Ages.
I did, yes.
In the theater.
I did. Well, so have we talked about my summertime tradition?
We have not.
At least once a year on a summer day, I'll take off the whole day. And then in the afternoon, I go and I try to find the least populated movie theater possible and the least popular movie. And I buy popcorn and drink and I sit and I unwind in the theater. And it's me playing summer hooky, like on a cognitive level and on an actual meat space level. Mm-hmm. And so the summer, it was a very tough summer for us, 2012.
Yes.
And I desperately needed something that would turn off my brain for a few hours. And I went to see Rock of Ages. And Tom Cruise
plays the aging rocker, Steezy Jacks.
Yeah, he really commits to it.
No, that's good for him.
So I want to point out, it's a terrible movie because it's based on a terrible musical. And movies that are based on terrible musicals are probably going to be terrible.
And it stars your arch nemesis, that the Dancing with the Stars dancer.
Well, so we can deconstruct the weird plastic repellents of Julianne Hough at a different time.
No, I think you got it there. Yeah. I think you gave the executive summary very well.
Yeah, but the reason I haven't let Rock of Ages slide off the brain pan is because it's a bad movie with both rivetingly awful performances. And I say this because, again, Julianne Hough and Diego Boneta, who play the romantic leads, it is as if two figures carved out of bars of soap and dressed in Barbie clothes are mashed together in a simulacra of human attraction.
Mm-hmm.
But Mary J. Blige plays the kindly proprietor of the strip club where the lady lead is forced to work. And she is quite possibly the world's first Mormon stripper, because when she finally takes to the pole, it's in a leotard that would not look out of place in a chorus line and a pair of fishnet stockings. And there is literally no way to get out of that outfit.
Strangely, she strips to What I Did for Love, which really
starts crying.
Kind of off-putting.
No, anyway, Mary
really kills the mood.
Anyway, Mary J. Blige does a phenomenal job with her part. Tom Cruise does a great job.
Okay.
Malin Ackerman, as a Rolling Stone reporter, is very, very funny and very committed to it. But Bryan Cranston should have actually spent some of his Breaking Bad money to buy up copies of this film and burn it, because he's an embarrassment. And so is Catherine Zeta-Jones. And so is Alec Baldwin, who in every shot is basically like tapping out in Morse code how much he wishes he hadn't signed up for this movie.
Blinking his distress.
Oh, no, it's like there are probably like hippies who believe in auras and energy who like staggered out of the movie. Oh, God, the things his vibes are sending out, because it's awful. Like, I have never seen an actor who is so unhappy to be there, where it's committed to a film that is pushed out into the world. I wonder about the takes they didn't show.
Yeah, I'm looking again. I'm just scrolling through Tom Cruise's filmography.
Uh-huh.
And with the exception of Tropic Thunder, which is mm-hmm. not really a Tom Cruise no. movie per se.
I saw Valkyrie on cable, on one of my cable prowls.
Yeah, how was that?
Well, it's Tom Cruise as an intense Nazi who wants to kill other Nazis. How do you think it was?
Odd.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally the only film in his filmography that, if mm-hmm. you put it in front of me, I'd say, oh yeah, I'll watch that, is A Few Good Men, which you do not like.
Oh, I hate that movie.
You do not like. I think it's okay. It's very, you know, it has its issues.
I thought
it
was okay in Minority Report.
I have not seen it.
Yeah, we saw it in the theater together.
No, I wasn't there.
Really?
That was with your other husband. That was with your other husband, Michael Phillips.
There probably is somebody named Michael Phillips.
There is lots of people named Michael Phillips. I get their mail all the time.
I loved him in Magnolia. He's mm-hmm. he's good and terrifying in Magnolia. Yeah. It's a great role, and he did a great job in it.
The Firm. I saw The Firm. That's
okay. I hated the book. I read the book on an airplane flight. But I should also point out, I've read like four John Grisham books and I've hated every single one of them.
They translate well to the big screen, let me tell you. Because they don't tax the brain.
No.
I saw Days of Thunder.
Good for you.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
Although it does have one very good line in it, where they Randy Quaid, before he went crazy,
mm-hmm.
is telling Robert Duvall
mm-hmm.
that Tom Cruise is from California, mm-hmm. Tom Cruise is from California. And Robert Duvall goes, "You mean he's a Yankee?" Because it's NASCAR. Yeah. And Randy Quaid says, "No, no, he's from California. They're not anything." That's a nice bit.
California is almost like the anti-Texas when you think about it, because there's a strong sense of regional identity, but we're really not that. From what I can tell, native Californians really don't feel an obsessive need to brand themselves that way to the rest of the world. You know, it's like a separate nation living within.
I don't like Rain Man. And I really don't like Tom Cruise's performance in that. Yeah, that is a really bad performance.
Okay.
It is one of those movies that really just, it's a try hard movie where you can just see them.
I'm acting
the hell out of this.
Yeah.
Look, don't you want to give me an award?
And stretching my skills.
It won so many awards. And so that's not how you reward people.
Okay. Did not see Cocktail.
When that movie came out, I worked in a Carl's Jr. I should point out, when the movie came out, we were 16.
Yeah, we were.
It wasn't like the movie came out last week and I was working at a Carl's Jr.
I remember about that movie is the song Kokomo is associated with it from the Beach Boys.
Yes,
and
it
I
was.
Just remember being 16, like, God, it's so lame, the Beach Boys and the radio.
But yeah. I was working at a Carl's Jr. and there was an idiot who worked at the Carl's Jr.
What?
This is a shock. That the hiring practices at the San Ramon Carl's Jr. were not, it was not a lengthy review process. Anyhow, he was quite smitten with the scene in Cocktail when Brian Brown and Tom Cruise are juggling the bottles and doing crazy things.
Oh, that
and he decided
well.
To do that with the ketchup and mustard one day in the back.
Oh, I know where this is going.
Yeah, well, let's just say that he was advised to clean up. After that little show of
no.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's
and now that young man is in Congress. No, I have no idea where he
wasn't. The 80s when Tom Cruise specialized in his whole callow young man learns how to become a real boy type of thing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the sequel to The Hustler, which never happened and does not exist, and I will.
It has
not
an Eric Clapton song associated with it.
Does.
That's all I know.
It's in the witch. You use it,
and I sort of feel like a lot of people in the '80s are like, "Yeah, we'd like to pretend that Eric Clapton's 1980s oeuvre never happened and doesn't exist," and I won't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
So let's see. There was Cocktail. Let me keep going back. There's Top Gun.
Never actually saw it.
My very first date, I went to see Top Gun, and the young man and I, obviously the relationship didn't last because it was not with you.
I hope not.
And
if so, I hope he's paying rent.
And then 6 months later, I went on my very second date with a different young man, and he took me to see Top Gun again.
Wow.
I came out of that movie with the prevailing impression that I really liked Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
You have to understand, I should explain at the time that I lived in the Tidewater, Virginia area.
Sure.
So
very popular.
Well, what I was going to say is all of the hot naval aviators and get trained there.
Yeah.
A lot of them do if they're not down in Florida.
Or Miramar.
Yeah. And so as a result, like, I actually knew I knew and was around a lot of these people just in a very casual environment. And none of them looked like Tom Cruise or Val Kilmer.
No.
No. They're all, you know. Think about the most boring character from The Right Stuff.
Yeah.
That's your, and that's the thing is you want a military pilot who like thinks of nothing but how to fly well and isn't busy like playing volleyball and riding motorcycles and stuff like that. Like you want someone flying a plane who is fully appreciative of the fact that every time they get into something that costs several $1 million, their job is to not waste taxpayer money. Like that's who I want flying my planes. I don't want Val Kilmer testing the strength of his cat by chomping on scenes and and Tom Cruise having the most weirdly unsexy love scene on screen with Kelly McGillis, who like then had to go flee to Amish country to get over the stench of that experience. And
the only thing the greatest thing that Top Gun ever gave to our society was the great Bobcat Goldthwait joke. Because there was that big
There was a recruiting
boom in the Navy because of that movie.
Uh-huh.
And Bobcat used to do this routine. Hey, you don't look like Kelly McGillis. You look like Maude. it was very funny.
So, you know, so there's Top Gun, which I saw.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Legend.
Sure.
Which it's Tom Cruise with like hilarious extensions. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember much else about it. And I think I saw Risky Business.
I saw The Outsiders that he is in. He is one of the 10,000 young actors.
They were all so dishy back in the day. Yeah. Holy cats. No, I think I don't think I saw that. Mm. But the thing that's always characterized Tom Cruise is he wants so bad for you to believe that he is whatever he's going to be, whether it's like a great pilot or like some futuristic screw up who keeps getting killed or what have you. Like his intensity is so overwhelming sometimes that it's almost like another character on the screen. And it worked out beautifully in Magnolia. Mm-hmm. And I actually like him in the Mission Impossible films.
Okay.
But I just... The Reacher thing, I think, perpetuates a ridiculous toxic male stereotype of the lone wolf who can somehow, using only the skills he was given as a trained killer and, you know, a handful of quips, can somehow take down dozens of people in one go. It's this kind of lone wolf fantasy that I think is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, and it gets more ridiculous the older the actor gets.
Yeah.
He should be at home watching his stories.
Or he should be the one who's like, darn it, you can't go out there in the field.
Listen to me. I should know. I'm Jack Reacher.
And like then he wheels out from the desk. You see he's missing his legs from the kneecaps down because of his last stupid
stunt. And then Kobe Smulders puts him into her pocket and says, there, Jack Reacher.
She gives him an M&M and he gnaws on it happily.
So you like some Tom Cruise movies and I like
different Tom Cruise.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, you liked Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, and A Few Good Men, and that's it.
Yeah.
In the course of a 30-year movie career.
You have to admire how carefully he's constructed that career.
No, it's true.
He's made a real effort to work with a very deep bench of directors. He's worked with almost every A-list director out there.
Sure.
And although his career seems to have devolved mostly into I'm a jut-jawed lone wolf dude who shoots at things and unravels conspiracies.
Listen.
See also Mission Impossible.
I am going to talk intensely at you.
But, you know, there was a time when he did try to stretch into different roles. I
can't imagine what time that was.
Magnolia.
Magnolia. No, he's still the intense.
Magnolia was like an intense, unredeemable jerk. Tom Cruise tends to go for redemptive character arcs in almost all of his films.
Sure.
What I think is interesting is the only time he's really played a parent was in the Steven Spielberg movie.
War of the Worlds.
Yeah, War of the Worlds. Mm-hmm. And that I don't think people like thinking of Tom Cruise as a parent. I think it brings up all of their own buried parental baggage.
Mm. Tom Cruise is the most intense parent in the world.
See, exactly.
You are going to take out
garbage. No, that's actually, you know how I want to see him now?
Mm.
Is I want to see him as the demanding parent of a sports prodigy. I want to see him play that kind of anti-hero where there's an intense conflict of interest, where the hero really loves his dad. But his dad's emotional intensity is just weird and unfair and toxic.
My God, you've just saved Tom Cruise's career.
Well, then
it's clearly on the ropes.
Yeah, obviously.
What on account of all the movies that he's asked to do?
No, I think that
the vast sums of money he's paid to do them.
I think if he's not afraid of appearing unlikable, but that does seem to be a problem. I think if he wanted to put that intensity to good use and plumb new territory than playing like an intense sports dad. I mean, no one's going to buy him as a backstage father where he's, you'll go out there and sing the aria.
You are going to go out there.
But like,
I'm nobody, but you will come back a star. Hi, I'm Tom Cruise.
But like, imagine how disturbing and compelling he would be as the father of a 19-year-old tennis prodigy.
Yeah, sure. He could, yeah. That'd be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be a very good, I would go see that
movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, get on that, Hollywood.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise is bad tennis dad.
Coming
soon to a theater near you.
15 Love, they'll call it.
Double deuce.
That's like all I know about tennis.
Yes.
I took tennis lessons for a summer and they actually
Advantage.
Refunded. The instructor actually refunded McEnroe. My mother the money because I'm tennis.
Yeah, you have other talents.
Mm-hmm.
Let's close the book on Tom Cruise and crush him in its pages because he's so tiny. And move on to
I feel like this is almost you're almost asking me to talk about the terrible, terrible movie our daughter's been making us watch lately.
Mm. Oh yes,
Tom Thumb with Russ Tamblyn.
Oh yeah.
And actually, that segues well into the second preview.
Well, since you brought up Tom Thumb, let's do the Tom Thumb is George Powell movie mm-hmm. from late 50s
with Russ Tamblyn playing
Alan Young, who recently died, plays the romantic lead. He was for those of you who do not know the name Alan Young, he was Wilbur on Mr. Ed.
Was he also a voice actor for Disney?
I'm sure that he was because he's amiable. You'd know him if you saw him.
Anyway, this is
Peter Sellers is in it doing really really poor Peter Sellers
buying thing. It was money for buying art or whatever Peter Sellers did with his money. Yeah. Anyway, this movie is awful. This movie is wretched. This movie is what happens if you put the Busch Gardens Europe amusement park in a blender with, say, a drunk who's reading a little golden book. And then you hit for pay and throw in some antic 1950s stuff and really bad musical and some offensive racial stereotyping.
Yeah. Tom Thumb's dolls come to life and one of them is a Chinese doll. And that's all that we need to say about that.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah. I fast forward through those parts.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to have to. Oh God, they're awful.
So anyway,
Russ Tamblyn is in it.
The best thing that can be said about it is that the animation and the special effects were probably very innovative for their time, because that was George Powell's thing, and that Russ Tamblyn can dance.
Yeah, and he does very nicely. Yeah. He's young and springy, and
unfortunately, all the songs that he dances to stick in your brain until you
they're
until you stab a fondue fork into your ear.
Yes.
Gonna be doing that the rest of the show. We can stop now.
Yeah, it's awful. So our daughter loves this movie. We hate it. She loves it. Mm-hmm. She loves it. And the thing that we're learning now that she is five and change and has opinions and is not shy about expressing them, a trait that I frankly am shocked.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Yeah, exactly.
Thought that skipped it generation.
Oh, but that were true. We are now at the stage in our life where there is stuff that we watch that we loathe.
Yeah.
Or rather, we have to negotiate between
white knuckle our way through it.
Or we negotiate between watching stuff that is decent and watching stuff that is designed to appeal solely to 5-year-olds. So, you know, there's that. We just watched the trailer for Pete's Dragon, the remake of Pete's Dragon.
And for those of you who think, oh, we've come to the portion of the program where Phil decries a remake, I don't care that they remade Pete's Dragon.
I didn't like it that much the first time, because as a kid, Mickey Rooney disturbed me.
Yeah, Lampy was the name of his character in that. You know how I know this? Without checking? Loved Pete's Dragon as a kid.
Oh, I hate it.
I saw it twice in the theaters. Wow. I dragged my parents to see that twice. We owned the album, and I would play the album. And
I seethed with resentment at that movie because there were no... First of all, the stupid dragon was a... And I was so sick and tired of all the fun, cool things in movies being boys.
Voiced by Charlie Callis.
And then it's Pete's dragon. And I was like, why couldn't it be like Pete and Jennifer's dragon? Or why did it have to be a boy who got to live in a cave and have cool adventures and have a dragon? I was just so tired of like all of the Disney movies that my parents had dragged me to by that point, or my grandparents had dragged me to. Featured like a comatose princess, or a princess who pricks a spindle and goes comatose, or a princess who eats an apple and goes comatose. And
your parents didn't take you to the Jodie Foster Disney movies?
No.
The Freaky Fridays and the one where she's a robber with Leo McKern.
You have to understand first time I went to a non-Disney movie, coincidentally also the first time I didn't cry all the way through the movie, was when I went to see Star Wars. And that was when I was like, I'm going to become Princess Leia. She was the first person I had seen on a screen where I'm like, this is somebody who looks like me that I can identify with. And this is who I want to be.
Candle Shoe was the one where Jodie Foster is a robber, by the way.
My goodness.
They didn't take you to see the Witch Mountain movies?
No.
Oh, wow.
No. I did get to go see The Rescuers.
With Miss Bianca.
Yes. Oh, Bernard.
Oh, Bernard.
Bernard, she's in terrible trouble.
She's in terrible trouble.
Well, the thing is The Rescuers is actually, you know, like, offensive. It's offensive if you're like, I'm Cajun. I really hate how we're being stereotyped. But that movie is, like, seen largely as a lighthearted romp. If you read the book it's based on,
yeah,
it is really disturbing.
No.
like disturbing to the point where there's a chapter where they explicitly talk about children who are eaten by dogs.
Wow.
Yeah.
They like, left that out of the Disney
version.
No,
like the chapter ends with Miss Bianca realizing she's sitting on the femur of a human being and the femur has been gnawed to pieces.
Oh my.
Yeah, no. The reason I can rattle this off from memory is the first time I read that I was like, that wait, sort of what?
Gets seared into the brain, yeah. I don't think.
Yeah, no.
The you will not find that in Beverly Cleary, I can tell you that.
No, the book is gruesome.
Runaway Ralph does not have him.
No, the book is horrifying. If you're a child, you'll read it up because you're like thrilled, but the book actually revolves around, again, a cruel woman, which is like the movie. Mm-hmm. And in the book, the Duchess is so cruel. The only reason she keeps Penny around is because the 12 robots she has attending to her don't give her the satisfaction of crying and bleeding when they're beaten. So she literally keeps Penny around for the satisfaction of torturing her. And then if Penny tries to escape, the dogs assure Miss Bianca that all of the other children who have escaped were caught and eaten.
Oh, wow. Boy. This is taking a turn.
Yeah, so, you know, Bernard and Bianca, in the book, rest assured, Bernard and Bianca get her out, and she actually finds a home with people who love her and take care of her. Oh,
that's terrific.
But it is a harrowing read to get there.
Yeah, that is not the lighthearted romp
with
the bird and the alligators and the mosquito.
Yeah, no, it's a dragonfly.
Excuse me.
Ermintrude the dragonfly, which through the swamp. No, the book is considerably different from the movie because I went to see the movie when I was like 5 or 6 when it came out. And then a few years later, like it's a book for elementary school and there's a picture. It's like, oh, it's The Rescuers. It's got the picture of the mice in the cover. And you're like, oh, this is great. Mm-hmm. And I pick up and begin reading it. And I'm like, what the actual? What the what?
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So anyhow,
you hated
the Pete's Dragon. I loved it. Uh-huh. I had the album. I would I would run around and say it's a brazzle dazzle day. Da 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 da. What's up? Ba doo doo doo.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
Yeah, your poor mother.
Yeah, exactly. And you know,
oh, your father must have just been delighted.
Oh yeah. Son, want to go have a catch? No! I'm singing about a brazzle dazzle day! There's a candle in the window, Father! Son. Your old man is very disappointed.
This is my dream.
So yeah, and then I saw it after I had, you know, reached adulthood.
Uh-huh.
It's not a good movie.
No, it's terrible.
No, this was really the if you look at the history of the Disney movies,
yeah.
Really, you and I were children at the time where Disney was fresh out of ideas.
It was the nadir of Disney movies. Yeah, because
they made 2 Apple Dumpling Gang movies with Tim Conway and Don Knotts.
I never saw them.
Oh God, they're terrible.
Well, that's not really an incentive to catch up, is it?
There were a whole bunch of just crap Disney westerns with Hot Lead and Cold Feet was one. I'm actually going to pull up like the list now and read The Cat from Outer Space. I saw that in the theater.
Oh, I saw that on TV with my parents.
Yeah.
I was thrilled because it was the first time there was a cat on the screen instead of dogs, since I was a cat person from a very young age.
Unidentified Flying Oddball, The Black Hole.
Oh, my God. I had The Black Hole as a little long playing record.
I had that, too. And then again,
did we see that together recently?
We watched it as adults and we looked at each other and said, this is not a good movie.
No, because I remember, so in 1979, like the 2 things I was terrified of as a 7-year-old were quicksand and black holes.
Yep.
Because I was convinced that I would fall prey to either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Quicksand was like a huge bugbear in the childish imagination.
I saw Gus, the field goal kicking mule.
Oh my God, an actual thing that they
made. Yes, the Shaggy DA, that's another one.
You know what's appalling is there are probably people who signed off on those movies and committed to them and are now living on just giant sacks of cash.
Oh no, they kept making them, so they, but Disney in the 1970s was not on a good run.
The
main animated movies, we mentioned The Rescuers, they did Robin Hood, and then they did not do another animated movie till The Fox and the Hound and The Black Cauldron.
Oh, wow. And weren't those Don Bluth ones? Or wasn't Don Bluth involved somehow?
He was gone by that
point. We are totally not talking about the actual preview that we watched.
Yeah, which is Pete's Dragon 2016 version coming soon to a theater near you.
So the thing about the Pete's Dragon 2016 version is you really cannot put Bryce Dallas Howard and a giant reptile on the screen and not make me expect to see her running around in high heels. I'm sorry. The image is indelible. It's there. You had Fay Wray in an ape's fist. You have Bryce Dallas Howard running away from a T-Rex in high heels. That is just the way it is. We're sorry. Your icon has been fixed in the firmament. Miss Howard, work with it. Run with it.
Yes.
So she's in it. And
Bryce Howard Dallas.
Wes Bentley, who is trying...
Howard Bryce Dallas.
Wes Bentley, who is trying to redeem his I'm super twitching intense reputation as playing the non-threatening paternal figure who will surely get together with Bryce Dallas Howard's character as they parent the young Pete of Pete's Dragon. Robert Redford has now graduated to playing Gilfs.
No. Robert Redford plays the fine leather chair that exists in the... And, hey, stop sitting on me, Bryce Dallas Howard.
And in a piece of casting that is both genius and kind of, Carl Urban is the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And I should mention, I love Carl Urban as McCoy. I think he's a great McCoy in Star Trek movies.
He is basically in the...
And I loved him on the Being Human Fox TV series. It was a really good underrated series that Fox stupidly canceled after a year.
I was going to say he's in the Jim Dale role in that he's the villain, but...
Yeah.
They're not, this has no connection at all with
he's a villain out of ignorance, not malice. And Isaiah Whitlock is in it as a policeman. Yes, and when we watched the preview for 2 minutes, every time it popped up on screen, Phil and I both went, shit.
Yeah. It's nice that Isaiah Whitlock Jr. has a brand.
Yeah.
And that brand is, Senator Clay Davis.
Yeah.
But every parent who drags their, gets dragged to the theater by their children. Every time Isaiah Whitlock comes on the screen, you're going to hear people muttering under their breath. So
this has a whole lot of CGI and behold the wonder of it all.
And the trailer really, you talk about the Rescuers book being a bummer. The trailer of this movie is kind of a bummer.
Elliot or
Pete is a feral child living in the woods.
It is literally two scenes away from like a slow single piano key going blink, 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 blink. I love you.
It's a dazzle day.
Yeah, it's got this weird tenor to it. And I'm like, why would I want to take my child to see this? What is the point of this?
I am woman, hear me roar.
No, this is also
got
disappointing
my foot
to me.
In the kitchen
is I would have
door.
I would have deeply, deeply loved it if there was a shot in the trailer where you see the dragon going past like the window of a home and
a lighthouse
and Helen Reddy's there like,
maybe they're saving that for that's going to be their
Easter egg of some sort.
Easter egg in the theatrical release.
Cause all I remember honestly,
unlikely as they've totally betrayed the legacy of Pete's Dragon.
Ugh. Well, they've made the dragon look much more like a dragon and much less like a disturbing lump and stuffed animal with purple hair.
I loved the Pete's Dragon float in the Main Street Electric. Right.
Oh, okay.
That was I think also the appeal of
the dragon. Yeah, you know, I have to say I didn't like the aesthetic of the dragon in the original. The aesthetic of the dragon in this one is pleasingly draconic.
It's How to Train Your Dragon-y.
But you know,
very
I'm,
Avatar, very
yeah. But you know what I'm really tired of is I'm tired of those shots where it's where you see some little boy or some man, and it's always a boy or a man like running off of a surface and jumping off to nowhere and then being rescued by something coming up underneath him.
Yeah, where is your Dragons of Pern?
Where
is your Gather Day?
To be honest, when I looked at the dragon in that trailer, I thought, okay, now you can legitimately. Like, I've actually talked about the books with Anthony Johnson on a different incomparable podcast, his Unjustly Maligned. But, like, the technology
Let's
now
not
exists.
Let's promote other people's work on this show, please.
But the technology now exists to make acceptable Pernese dragons.
Yes.
So, that said, I can only imagine how they deal with the source material. Oh, the
if they
bottles.
Do make it, I hope that they hire me to sing the Gather Day song.
Would you like to go ahead and do it now? Or should we save it for the pledge drive?
We could save it for the pledge drive.
Let's do that. So,
So give us, like, $5 if you want to hear me sing the Gather Day song, and 10 if you don't.
Yeah, that's more like it. But this whole Pete's Dragon thing raises an interesting question about the... Not an interesting question. It raises the interesting stage of life where we're at, where there's stuff we're going to go see with our kid where we loathe it. And I feel like we kind of lucked out last summer. We took our daughter to see the Minions as our first movie rather than like a Pixar film, because our theory was if she flips out in the theater,
and we have to leave. We're
not going to weep salty tears over missing the end of the Minions.
Right.
But it was surprisingly not terrible film. And, you know, she still enjoys bringing up references.
And I took her to Zootopia, mm-hmm. which
she really talks about ceaselessly.
Which she really likes.
And has now taken to pointing to animals and identifying them as predators or herbivores. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's...
Well done, makers of Zootopia.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, she's very into
that. And that was not a terrible movie mm-hmm. either. I did not like the shape of the animals.
Yeah.
They were weirdly torsoed and... Shakira,
plays one
song.
Yeah, no. Well, Shakira sounds like a Muppet too. Yeah, so that, yes. there's that.
I just want to say that other animals should get to. Yeah, okay, yeah. Shakira, thank you.
Sounds like a Muppet.
Thank you for participating.
So yeah, it's and the other thing that's beginning to sink in is, unlike children's TV shows where I can say no, you've watched two episodes. Children's, that's a heck of a commitment sitting there to watch a movie that I'm going to hate.
Yeah.
Whereas with children's TV. Our daughter loves a series that I hate. And
what's the name of that series?
I was about to get to it. Uh-huh. And because I'm not a complete monster, I do let her watch a couple episodes every week. And so I sit on the couch with her because one of the things we do, again, part nature, part nurture, is when we watch TV with her, we encourage, you know, it's like, well, what do you think of that development? Or does that make sense? Or how do you think that person's acting? And we're teaching her to engage with the text, as the academics might say. And so when I watch Sophia the First with my daughter, a series that I loathe with nearly every fiber of my being, every time we're watching, I can watch with her and go, do you really think Sophia needs a room that's nothing but 300 pink and purple dresses? Mm. Or do you think it's fair that the servants never, ever get a day off and instead spend all of their free time capering to five people who happen to be there by chance? But yes. No, Sophia the First is dreadful because it's... the premise is that Sophia's mother, somehow a commoner in the village, mm-hmm. somehow manages to land the king of Enchantia, because Enchantia has I guess really lax laws about succession or something. And yet, despite this mysterious sudden upward mobility, they are thrust into a class that unquestioningly accepts them while also maintaining the codified privilege of the royals. Which is to say that instead of becoming the social outcasts, they surely would have been if they had attempted to marry their way into, say, the British royalty. Sophia and her mother get to swan about a castle. Sophia goes to a school that's populated exclusively with appropriately multicultural royalty from other countries, because they all magic carpet in there every day, or magic Pegasus in there, or what have you. And then she learns lessons, because of course she does. And anyway, Sophia is so sweet and so smart and so beautiful and so thoughtful and so considerate and so special, she gets given a magic amulet that lets her do things like shrink and talk to animals. And
summon other Disney princesses.
And summon Disney princesses to her aid, because Disney and synergy. And she's even more special, Phil. She's venturous and diligent, and so she becomes the keeper of the magic library, too.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, which was just about the point where I literally had to bite back the profanities when I shouted at the screen mm-hmm. during that plot development. And so in each series, there are more and more layers of progressive specialness and coddled privilege and so on and so forth. And Sophia gets to solve everyone's problems and have everyone tell her how awesome she is most of the time. And I strongly suspect the reason that my kid loves this is because it plays to the egos of everybody in that age group, where they are special and unique and you know, the center of the earth, which revolves around them. And it is whoever's writing this really has nailed the id of the preschool set.
You know,
I hate it so much.
Yeah, you are a much better parent than I, because you can mm-hmm. hate this thing mm-hmm. and sit through it and yeah. And let our daughter enjoy it without making terrible comments. Last year, our daughter wanted to watch Angelina Ballerina.
Oh, God.
Which is basically this terrible mouse who mm-hmm. is a ballerina. And I managed to make it through one episode and then I tapped out. Yeah. Then it was, oh, we're not watching that again. Nope, Angelina Ballerina died.
Oh, it's off Netflix. Oh, I don't know what happened.
No. They only made one episode.
Wow.
It's amazing. Didn't get picked up.
Yeah. Well, she gets to watch a dance camp now. Yeah, she does. Let's just have her associate
with it. And now I've been exposed as a liar. Thanks, dance camp.
No, she she actually thinks we're morons who don't know how to get it.
Yeah.
And I'm
cool with that.
Yeah. No, so to counteract the odiousness of Sophia the First, I do let her watch episodes of The Tick on YouTube, because for reasons unknown to anyone, apparently there's no way to digitally stream it.
Right.
And I don't want to buy a DVD set because we don't own a DVD player.
The Tick has a long history of weird rights issues.
Yeah, exactly. This is anyway.
Because when they did the live action version, they had to change like
every... The Fledermaus became Batmanuel, yeah. And American Maid got turned into Lady Liberty.
Yeah.
And they had to... Ben Edlund and licensing. So, yeah. It is a challenge, I think, sometimes. Because we're at a point where instead of being able to carefully control everything that our kid is exposed to and consuming media-wise, and imposing our tastes on her, we are now responsible for helping her develop her own taste. And there's a degree of stepping back to it that, you know, it kills me because I'd love to be able to indoctrinate her. This is terrible and this is bull. But, you know... I feel like it's much more important for her to figure out on her own what she likes and doesn't like. And if that means I have to sit through Pete's Dragon of all friggin' things, then, you know, then so be it.
I think you'll be able to dodge that particular bullet. My parents were not so lucky.
Yeah. No, a couple times, huh?
Yeah.
And yeah.
No, I should almost write them a letter of apology for all the terrible things that
Because what you can do is you can point out that because we were raised in the 70s and 80s, we didn't have YouTube and Netflix and streaming media and thus didn't demand to watch it every day.
That's true.
Which is what children can do now.
No, instead,
there's a reason Frozen
would make them go to the theater multiple times and pay hard-earned money to see Helen Reddy and Mickey Rooney cavorting in a small main town.
I could never understand why Helen Reddy didn't just dropkick Mickey Rooney into the sea.
Passamaquoddy.
Oh, that's right. Why did she not just put a blanket?
He was drunk!
Yeah, exactly.
He fell into the ocean. I don't know what happened.
Mickey Rooney makes my skin crawl.
Yeah.
Like, I have literally never seen a movie of his where I haven't just wanted to, like, swat him with a fly swatter until he stops moving.
Black Stallion?
Ah!
Okay.
Yeah, no. Horse movies are also awful, so... No.
Sure, but that'll be a topic for another time. Shall we talk about other movies we've seen lately?
Yeah, let's do that.
I have a few.
Okay, yeah, me too.
Even though I haven't seen that many movies because life has been crazy this past month.
Yeah, two trip journalists. What are the odds?
Just WWDC and all that. And
Lenovo World.
Lenovo World, Google I.O., even further back.
Oh, God, yeah.
So,
it's been awful.
I recently saw Ice Station Zebra.
Yeah.
Which puts the lie to my theory that it's impossible to make a boring sub movie.
Oh, this is excruciating.
Boy, they did it.
It took us like 2 weeks to finish that.
Although that I would argue has very little submarines in it, and it's mostly them standing around at the Arctic
like, arguing with each other.
Arguing and looking for things.
Ernest Borgnine is just disturbing and everyone is bland.
But this isn't a movie I watched recently, but just to keep on the theme of things that I liked as a kid.
Yeah.
One that actually held up, and this came out more when I was 11, 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Max Dugan Returns, which was a Neil Simon picture. He wrote it, at least. Jason Robards is the...
Jason Robards?
Robards, yeah. Is the father of ill repute who returns to his daughter, is Marcia Mason. She's a single mother raising Matthew Broderick, of all people.
Wasn't Matthew Broderick raised by a wide variety of single mothers on the screen? Wasn't that
his thing for a time. Yeah. And in this movie, Jason Robards has stolen money from the mob and is using it to make their lives better. And Donald Sutherland's the romantic lead in this crazy movie.
Well, that is the thing that always gets me about Animal House.
Yeah.
He's the professor that seduces students there, too. And, like... I find him roguishly attractive.
Yeah.
But, like, there's a big difference between carnal prospect and romantic lead.
Anyhow, I really enjoyed this movie as a kid.
Uh-huh.
And I saw it a few years back as an adult. And I thought, oh, this is not going to be good because you like terrible things when you're a kid. And it's not that bad.
Oh.
It's not great, but it's not that bad. And I would watch it again. Mm-hmm. Would watch again.
There you go.
Max Dugan Returns. Mm-hmm. Fine movie.
Well, Ice Station Zebra can't recommend.
No. No.
I saw Batman Year One recently.
Oh, did you?
Which is one of the DC animated films that they've been rolling out to capitalize on the interest in DC characters without having to deal with either Zack Snyder or actual human beings. And, you know, so I put the or in that sentence. And anyway, Batman Year One is based on a Frank Miller graphic novel, so you realize it's very manly, very exceedingly manly. But
is this the one that has the anime look to it?
Yeah, it does, which works. And here's why it works is there's a certain antiseptic feel to the way they do Gotham, in which all of the humanity has been bleached out. And it is really effective for conveying the bleak soullessness of Gotham as a city. Also, cartoon violence somehow seems much more noir and realistic when it's done in a anime-ish style. Because I was thinking about this because I really like the look of the Paul Dini, I want to say Bruce Timm, but it's like, the stuff from like Justice League. We were watching Justice League in JLU back in the '80s, like that really bold, bright, exaggerated proportions thing would absolutely not work for the story. The animation works for the story. Bryan Cranston voices Commissioner Jim Gordon, who was then just a lieutenant, and Cranston's voice work is excellent, heartbreaking. And Ben McKenzie voices the young Bruce Wayne, who's just becoming Batman. And it's kind of weird. He does an okay job, but like for me, the voice of Batman is always Kevin Conroy. Hmm. So anyway, it's a nice way to spend about 70 minutes.
Your which favorite is of all the Batmans.
My favorite of all is Kevin Conroy. So it's a nice way to spend about 75 minutes. It's a real visual treat. I enjoyed it. Did we watch anything else together recently? That we liked?
No. We started watching Mad Max Fury Road and then I fell asleep. Well, which I got suggests how tired I was.
Well, I also got distracted. Because
the first 20 minutes of that movie are just insane.
Well, I got distracted by the logistics of the breast pumping.
Yeah.
Because it didn't make sense to me that they would actually like consider that as a viable fluid source. Mm-hmm. Because you think about it this way, they'd have the woman pumping, what, once every 4 hours? And you figure the average woman, when she's pumping, probably produces anywhere from 4 to 12 ounces per every pumping session. So if you think about it, over the course of an average pumping day, she's producing maybe 24 to 72 ounces. Mm-hmm. That's less than half a gallon is what, 128 ounces? And a human being is supposed to... And a human being is supposed to do what? Like a gallon of liquid per day? Like, it just... The volume of production doesn't make sense given the amount of infrastructure that they appeared to have and the number of people who appeared to be drinking breast milk and the number of women they appeared to have pumping. Like, it just... It literally doesn't make sense. Also, breastfeeding women require a whole lot of calories just to keep producing. So, if you're running them as on a starving deficit, there's no way they're producing. Like, the whole system is just designed to waste calories the way they're doing it. And I just keep getting distracted by that. I don't understand the premise.
It's just such a shame that... talking about the logistics of breast pumping is just such a cliched form of film criticism.
This section sponsored by Medela.
I remember when I was reading Pauline Kael's review of Citizen Kane, and she talks about the breast pumping scene. And I just thought, ugh.
Well, I'm just saying, if you're going to make that...
It's been done.
If you're going to make... No, this is like a central tenet of the film from what we were able to discern before you began snoring.
Yeah.
Is that they have a room full of bored-looking women who are being pumped for breast milk. And like four of them are escaping with Charlize Theron. And they send out like dozens of shirtless dudes with silver teeth to go run down four women. They're wasting an enormous amount of petroleum. Which would also seem to be a scarce resource in a post-industrial crashed world. Like, if you have that much gas, why aren't you working on building better food sources? This dystopia literally defies logic.
All I remember is I was at a tech show and visiting a company in their booth. I think they did something involving
splits. Yeah,
and they were showing Mad Max and. When I was talking to the company representative, it was the exact moment when they cut to the breastfeeding machine. And I believe I actually stopped the interview to say, "What in the living hell?"
Oh, that's great.
And that is why I am where I am.
Yeah.
As a guy.
As a tech reporter.
As a tech reporter.
Yeah. No, I mean, it'll be fine when we go back to it. I liked the part with the good guy whose guitar shot flames. Mm-hmm. I feel like Slash is probably jealous of that. But we were both exhausted, and I just kept getting distracted by doing the math, trying to figure out exactly how many ounces they were getting per day. Where are the women getting the calories from? Why are they doing this? Like, the blood stuff I can kind of get because it's almost a derivative of the whole, oh, I'll eat the heart of my enemy to get stronger thing. The breast milk stuff I don't get.
Well, if you don't get it, who's going to? So
exactly. So moving on.
I think we've talked.
I think we've talked about movies enough.
Talked about as much as we're going to talk.
God, we've talked a lot. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
Listeners, I want to thank you again for your response to the pledge drive from the last time. It was really gratifying to hear from so many of you.
It was really nice of y'all.
Thank you. We love doing this podcast, and we love that we have listeners. Let's see. What else should we say?
We'll be back.
Let us know if we should turn Fury Road back on or if I'm just going to keep getting distracted by the logistics of liquid nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And let us know which...
Let us know if there are movies we should be... whose trailers we should be watching.
And tell us which terrible things you inflicted on your parents during childhood.
Yeah,
you can tweet to me at L. Schmeiser, or you can tweet to Philip Michaels at
Philip Michaels.
Or you can tweet us at The Incomparable. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again for listening.
And we'll wrap it up. I'm Philip Michaels.
I'm Lisa Schmeiser.
And, yeah.
We've run some movies.
Yeah.